LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that have been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment from New York. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm sitting across from a guy who, when we first really got to know him on TV as Logan on Dark Angel, he didn't smile too much. He made up for it ever since by sort of smiling his way through many, many, many years of NCIS. And now not smiling so much in the new series Bull, in which he plays Bull. I'm sitting across from Michael Weatherly. First of all, Michael, thanks so much for doing this.
It is a deep and profound pleasure, Elvis, to be in the booth with you.
Nothing deep here, but let me ask you this, because you've worked as an actor, as a guy who basically has to be reading everybody. These characters you played have been these characters who are basically sort of professional assessors of situations. And I wonder how you sort of get your mindset ready to play that kind of guy.
Yeah, sometimes, which comes first? I think, were they that way? You know, I grew up in a family where there was a lot going on and you needed to be on your toes, whether you were at the dinner table or just trying to navigate whatever social dynamics were swirling around. And in a nutshell, my mom's Boston Irish Catholic and my father is Birmingham, Alabama Republican. And so whose roommate was Donald Rumsfeld at Princeton. So there's a certain severity to one side of the deal. And my mom is actually the one who taught me how to throw a punch. So, you know, you've got there's a real blue collar, white collar strangeness inside my DNA. And that, I think, is always kind of the engine inside the characters that I play. I didn't really start thinking about it until my third round of therapy a few years ago. And then I was like, oh, that's what I do. So, yeah, I don't – whether, you know, it's an underground cyber journalist with a genetically engineered super hot girl next to him or – and I'm speaking, of course, of Mark Harmon –
I'm just tearing up just hearing that. I'm sure Mark is too.
Yes.
That will explain all the love slaps, all that sort of romantic tension.
Yeah, there was contact. But I do pay attention to people, and I don't think you become an actor because it went well growing up.
Do you really think that? That's part of it?
I do. I think you're trying to figure yourself out through other people's stories. So for me, that's always been the first way into a script and to a character and to unlocking things. And I learned something very early on when I was doing a soap opera, and I was a little judgy about the paycheck. And, you know, I felt a little like I was
slumming
or that, you know, something like in the movie My Favorite Year when he goes, you know, the actor Alan Swan, he goes, yeah, he goes, I think Alan Swan is beneath us. He goes, of course he's beneath us. He's an actor. and I feel that does – it can get you. You can get self-conscious and start to be disingenuous about, you know, the choices that you've made. And to me, it's much more authentic whether you're doing soap or you're doing, you know, pap or wherever you are in the world of storytelling. As long as you're taking it seriously and having fun at the same time, it doesn't really matter if you're – you know, if you're slumming or if you're at the highest heights, because it's all the same thing.
In what way?
I mean, the nice thing about the high heights is if the writing makes sense and is logical and sequential or challenging, it's easier to memorize. You would be amazed how hard it is to memorize bad writing. If I just say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's much easier than 5, 1, 3, 4, 2. You know, and that's bad writing, the out of sequence thoughts. I have become very comfortable with cheat sheets and putting up almost billboard sized stuff. I do the Brando, you know, and I've learned as I get older to put them higher. So you lift your chin a little bit. Don't put the cheat sheets low because then you get them.
My guest was showing us his jawline on TV, but also looks deep in thought, is Michael Weatherly's new show on CBS, is Bull. And one of the things I want to ask you about is something that when I have actors here comes up is part of the game is this thing you're talking about, this sort of schism where the idea of getting a steady paycheck is both kind of really nirvana and anathema, you know, that you want to be the idea of being able to support yourself doing this is fantastic. But on the other hand, you don't want to get in this thing where you know the lines before they're on the page. And so what was it like to walk away from something that's one of the biggest hits in the world to making this basically daring yourself in a new venue?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean,
what came first? Was it the offer to do Bull, or were you just looking to try to do something different and that came around?
Yeah, the first thought that came to my mind was, no way. I'm not going to go do another full hour order. And then I met with Rodrigo Garcia, who directed the pilot. And
who's Paul, a great director.
Who's great and is just such a cool energy and spirit. And
it doesn't help to have a father who's a Nobel Prize winner.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I'd never brought that up. I would make vague magical realism references and, you know, just to be irritating. But and then Paul Attanasio, who wrote the script. And the Phil McGraw element was this strange kernel inside the whole, you know, project. And I thought, what the hell is Phil McGraw doing in this thing, you know? And then I started doing research and understanding what trial sciences became and how we actually live in a world now of the same kind of focus group testing and everything that used to be the domain of politics, advertising, and, you know, entertainment. If you Google something, you're immediately on however many databases forever and ever as the guy who Googled that by the billions. And these data dives happen. You become basically all the things you tell the computer you're interested in. And it reveals, unfortunately, a pretty accurate picture of who you really are, not who you pretend to be. And so that's, to me, what's fascinating about Bull is it's this really trying to assess how people are deep down going to decide which way they go in a jury vote. But it's the same with politics. You know, you can't change somebody's mind. Like a Trump supporter is a Trump supporter. Even if you show them video of Trump stabbing someone in the head, you know, they'll still be like, well, that person probably had it coming. It's like, no, that's a 7-year-old. there's no like reason that can be okay to you. And people will – they call that backfire effect on our show, which I don't know if that's a real term. I love that all this stuff happens. You know, when Bull goes down the road a little bit, you'll see – I think we're making things up. I'm totally fascinated by the – he's like a shameless practitioner of the pragmagical arts. You know, he has this pragmagical realism where I think Bull is really just making assessments based on all the stuff we're talking about, the data. And then he's got sort of an instinct about people.
That's
got
to be what it's about finally for this – for him, isn't it? That because – there's so much ego involved in that kind of – practicing that kind of thing and inventing really a craft for yourself to practice that you're constantly sort of like showing yourself off and saying, yeah, I've got all this machinery and all these computers and all these ways to read people. But it really comes down to my gut.
Mm-hmm. And meeting Phil McGraw was the – believe it or not, and this is a very strange thing – was the clincher to me because – and I don't know if you've ever encountered the man –
I'm in public radio. No.
Well, it's deeply fascinating. And like many people I've met before, like James Cameron and Don Belisario and Les Moonves, powerful, strong-minded people who are kind of like movie heroes that we – you know, like Steve McQueen doesn't really give a shit what you think in his movie characterizations. And I always found that – singular focus fascinating because I'm far too empathetic and I get concerned about other people's feelings and stuff and live in this world where I wish I could be more like that. You know, I wish I could kind of rule everybody else's feelings out so that I could focus determinedly on this one path. Well, it turns out that Phil McGraw is empathetic and gets what other people are thinking and feeling. he's just not – it's not affecting him. Like, so I asked him when we met, I said, have you ever had a crisis of conscience in this thing where you're looking at people, or have you ever had an analysis paralysis where you've analyzed so much that now it's a cloud and it's murky and you can't make a decision? And he stared at me for a full 5 seconds and said, no. So, you know, it's like I've never had self-doubt. I've never had any sort of crisis in my life that made me feel like I was wrong. That's fascinating because – and that's not Bull. Bull is a guy who's got huge turmoil. I'd much rather play that part of the bluffer and the con man and the shaman at the same time, you know, because there's snake oil salesman in every in everybody from all the stories that I love. You know, that's why I love Cary Grant, because he's not Cary Grant. He's Archie Leach. And there's so much going on in every layer of a Cary Grant performance. That's kind of what I aspire to.
What you're talking about to me is this thing I just really find interesting, because it's almost the difference you're talking about between the acting of the era of Cary Grant, which is presentational, and everything that somebody was on the surface.
Yeah.
And basically, you wrote a Brando, the not the presentational, but you know the acting of the modern acting, which is there's always some sense of, no matter what Brando played, those characters are always, there's something about them that suggests that weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And watching what I've seen of Bull is that he's fascinated by people who exhibit weakness because they get a chance to show something he can't show.
Right. Yeah, I think he's a junkie for human behavior, and the real driver behind that is he has some aspect of his own behavior that is a true mystery to him, and it's disturbing to him. I don't think he's a guy who's figured it all out. Now, this may run contrary to what CBS thinks the show is about. But when I was doing the pilot, I had Fellini's 8.5 going on a loop in my trailer and back in my hotel room, because I loved the idea of Bull as Guido and trying to, haunted by, you know, the visions and dreams and chaos and whatever those troubled things are. But an impish grin and a twinkle in his eye, as Marcello would do. And so that's really how I saw him, as a director of this group of people, bluffing his way through until he finally came to a real conclusion about something, which is, which person on the jury can he get to? And like, it doesn't bother me that there are these contrivances and collapsed ideas. I mean, it's a 43-minute show without commercials. You got to get it done. You got to tell your story. So that doesn't bother me so much. What I'm always looking for and is, like, I have no idea what we're shooting today. I will land and memorize my stuff on the fly and rephrase it if I need to. And I'm just telling the story to myself and trying to figure it out. But whatever happened to me today will be in the show, because I can't pretend to be somebody else. I can only be Michael Weatherly wandering around his life, and then the thin shell of a Logan Cale or Tony DeNozzo or Bull is on top of it. But it's my brain working away behind it, and that's just much more interesting than trying to be a pretend person. I don't know how to do that.
We'll take a break. My guest, who probably has learned way too much from Marlon Brando, is Michael Weatherly. We're talking about his new show, Bull, on CBS. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcast you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join. And thanks.
Welcome back. He'll get you off. It's Bull we're talking about. My guest is Michael Weatherly. It's The Treatment. You were saying something. We were talking before the break, and you were talking about getting lines thrown at the last minute. And I've talked to actors who that terrifies, who they once they commit to the script and character, they have got to believe that that thing is the constant for mm-hmm. them, you know, that they've and so much of TV is this kind of thing where you're solving a problem where you couldn't get that location that day mm-hmm. or the actor who was going to do this thing couldn't do this thing. So the script is being rejiggered to fit the actor who's just shown up. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't throw you off at all. Is it just because you come up through television so much over the last 20 years and that's kind of changed the way you approach it? Or is that in some way the way you've always been?
I started ad-libbing when I was on The Soap, which really drove people
nuts. You ad-libbing on Loving?
Yeah. But I learned that the other actors were only listening for their cue line, which is the last thing you say before they get to speak. I mean, it's like talking to a narcissist. They're really just waiting for their opportunity to, you know, talk. And so I got really into it, and I started trying to figure out who did that. And I got to do an audition with Peter Falk for a Columbo, and the casting director came out and said, you know, Peter goes in and out of the script, but he may be asking you personal questions about your real life, and then he'll jump right back into the scene. And I got to do this with Peter, and he did it. And he walked right up to me after asking me what part of Connecticut I was from, the rich part or the real part. And I said, the rich part. And he went, ah, an honest one. And he came right up to my face and inches from my face. And he goes, what are you thinking right now? And I said, I'm looking at you and I'm trying to figure out which of your eyes is the glass one. and he laughed. And it was so much fun, because if you're going to ad lib or if you're going to go off book in life or in acting, you better not give it. Like, you have to take your edit function out, and you have to be, you know, and you have to – it's weeding that garden constantly, because if you care what people think about how well you memorized the line or how you did, you become in the service of a lot of other departments and you lose yourself in it. And Falk had that. He was – I don't know if you ever got to talk to him, but he was just fantastic to me. And I didn't get to do Columbo because – I booked this thing where I played Robert Wagner, and Peter Bogdanovich directed The Mystery of Natalie Wood. And that, to me, was an embarrassment of riches. Other people might think, that's not a career. You're going to be like the guest bad guy on the – like in the late stage Columbo, or you're going to play Robert Wagner in a TV movie. Like, I'm not sure the career's going so well. But to me, I was like, no, maybe I'm just a silver lining Pollyanna – weirdo, but there's always something hilarious and fun to be discovered if you're not a slave to this construct, you know. And I get it. Like, if it's Mamet or something or Shakespeare, there's a certain pentameter, and this has been constructed to be delivered in this way. And that's classical music, and I get it. But I'm more interested in rock and roll and jazz and, you know, or interpretive noise sometimes.
Because you're saying, I just remember you worked with Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, God. My first day with Rodney, they were changing a lens and I didn't know what to say to him. And I said, we're just standing there and he won't speak to me. He has said, and I go, are you having fun? I'm 26 years old. I don't know what to say to Rodney Dangerfield. So that's what I ask him. And he goes, am I having fun? The kind of question is that? Am I having fun? No, I'm not having fun. I'm making a goddamn movie. Fun. Am I having fun? You want to know what's fun? Give me a bag of blow and a 15-year-old girl in the back of a limousine. Now that's fun. And I'm like, oh. And then I heard pictures up, you know, and I had to figure out how to act with Rodney Dane. And he was great. He turned to me at one point and he goes, after they cut, he goes, don't take a pause that long again. I won't put up with that Chevy Chase. And I was like, oh, that was before I heard many stories about Chevy Chase, you know. But I have found myself in the company of some extraordinary people along the way. And
well, you made your living for a long time working with a guy who never trained as an actor, Mark Harmon, who.
Oh, yeah. But he did tolerate, and I was very grateful that he supported my off the cuff, kind of loose approach to acting and in general.
But there's kind of a constant look of consternation he had around you that I can see almost as like a reaction in real time to what you were doing, wasn't it?
Oh, I think a lot of the head slap was born out of a real irritation that Mark had with me in a scene where I was chatting up an attractive female background artist because I didn't have any dialogue in the scene. And Harmon just, he just came over and whacked me in the head. They saw it in the dailies and they started writing it into the show. And I think all that stuff is real, but that's what I mean about the ad-libbing and the looseness.
But that's what I mean too about somebody who has a way of working, and he strikes you as being somebody who almost has to be doing something physically in the scene, who he doesn't have to do himself.
Right.
And that is born out of that. And just watching him listen to you, I can sort of see him going, what is he doing now? Okay, you have to lay pipe here. What are you doing?
Right. Well, yeah, I learned so much on NCIS. It was the craziest. You know, it's a very unusual show because if you haven't watched it, you think it's this one thing. But then if you watch it, I mean, Sarah Silverman screamed at me in the Erewhon Market in L.A. And she was like, oh, my God, DiNozzo. And I'm like, Sarah Silverman watches NCIS? You know, but I'll make an important distinction between – at least important to me, not to you, Elvis.
I was just resting my eyes. What are you saying?
I go to work now. I used to go to work and take off the edit function so that DiNozzo could say anything that popped into his head, pop culture reference or whatever it was. When I go to work now, Bull is this, I have discovered, very emotional character. So I
– That's a big departure from the pilot where he's kind of almost always – in the weird
way – in control.
Yeah.
I've tried to make him more out of control but holding on to the reins – and compartmentalizing as much as possible. But I think there's a breakdown in a – we already shot an episode where I wake up in a field with no pants on next to a cow. So you know that's happening with Bull. And that
certainly gives a whole new resonance to the title.
Yes. Bull, cow. Cow, bull. And the funny thing is that I wake up and look at the cow and the cow looks at me and you're not quite sure what happened. But so what I'm saying is that the pilot was a point of departure, and there's a formula that the show is, I think, satisfying to a great many people and comforting to a great many people. But it's also hopefully got some layers and, you know, there's some new places to go. I don't know who the guy is, and that makes it fun to go to work. If I had him figured out, I'd be bored to tears.
Is that one of the things that can be difficult about doing network TV? Is at some point you do get to know who the guy is too well?
I think so. I think that's got to be – I haven't had that experience yet because even DiNozzo to me was a constantly challenging mystery.
If you're playing somebody who's an action hero who's not sure he's an action hero, that
right.
gives you a whole sort of sense of tensions to play with, doesn't
right.
it?
Well, I got to – yeah, I got to do everything. I got to do sort of romantic, comedy, drama, action, but I wasn't the guy. It was like the hero moments all went to the other guy. So I had all of that without the big finish, which I guess is tantric sex, right? But that's what I was, the tantric action hero.
My guest, who apparently is channeling Sting over here, is Michael Weatherly. He's the star of Bull on CBS. This is The Treatment. Now you're in a position where, though, you get to be the guy and you get to set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of insecurity, of being unsure, gets to be – you're laying the foundation by being this guy. So how does that work now for you that you're setting the tone?
It's really, really fun because I had a friend visiting the set last night and it's a loose set and we have a lot of fun. And he's an actor who's worked for years and years and years, decades. And he said, you know what's interesting about your set? And I said, what? And he goes, it feels like the number one's not working today. Because what can happen is – there's a heaviness when here he comes, he's coming, you know. And everyone's like, oh, here he comes, you know. And to me, that's the opposite of fun. Dad's coming home. Put away your stuff, you know. I don't want that. I don't, you know, that would just be a bummer to me to be that dude where everyone gets quiet when you walk into the hair and makeup trailer or is falsely jovial to you because they want job security or you have sycophants around you. And that just is like, oof. I would rather have like waterboarding. Like it's torture to me. So that's what I strive for, which may be the most inside out goal of being number one, which is the, you know, the absence of number one.
It sounds like you're almost creating an atmosphere that you kind of wanted to have for yourself.
Yeah, ever since I went to boarding school at 14. I mean, I reject all kinds of authority, but I also appreciate that it has to be there. I love a call sheet. I love knowing what my next day is. A schedule is really good for me because then whatever that set of parameters is, I will mess around as much as possible. It's a sandbox, but you got to have the edges of the box to keep the sand in. Otherwise, I guess it's called a beach, but life's just a beach.
No, you didn't torture that metaphor too much at all, but let me.
That's my whole apartment is littered with dead horses and metaphors.
Well, let me say this because you're talking about the way actors react. And on the show, you've got people from Freddie Rodriguez, who's just really loose and done a lot of movies, lots of different kinds of things, too. You got an actor who's just come from the biggest Broadway show of the 21st century, mm-hmm. who went out and did the same thing every night because you can't miss a song cue.
Yeah. Oh, and Geneva Carr, who's just like this wacky screwball comedy actress.
The show we're talking about, of course.
Is Bull, yeah. And I have this extraordinary group of people to play with. And to me, the ensemble has to learn to trust each other first, and then you got to give each other all kinds of challenges. And, you know, I think setting somebody up with the line exactly as written so they don't even have to listen to you because they're just going to say the thing they prepared. Luckily, in this group of actors, you have real actors who want to be challenged, and they're listening to you. And, you know, we raise the bar with each other every day, and if something has the faint whiff of bullshit, we call it. And, you know, we check each other's any hubris or any ego or any stuff that starts to – that can climb into TV sets and movie sets. We have a little bug zapper for that. And it's because, again, that – like I was talking about, I think the absence of fear can be – I guess it would be love. When you create that vacuum, the only other thing you get is something that's supportive and compassionate. And there's a couple of different ways to be a leader. And I do choose the one. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but I do choose the one that's a little more inclusive. And let's bring all those voices, because sometimes the A dolly grip has a better suggestion than your co-star for how to do that beat or how to get a button on a scene. And you've got to be available to it.
But I guess one of the things that I've heard from actors who come to do this is they say sometimes that fear and that tension ends up creating something that you couldn't have imagined. And I think sometimes because there's so much fear in these – because, as the metaphors were made before, their parking meters are for thousands of dollars for every minute. Uh-huh. And that idea of having to respond to fear becomes Pavlovian to them.
Mm-hmm. I guess there. What I mean by the parameters and the structure of the day and the script and there's enough fear when they say rolling. Like sometimes you don't need extra fear. Is my thing. It's you got to have rules. You got to have lines in the middle of the road. So I'll stay on this side and you stay on that side. But other than that, you know. I think the speed limit is a suggestion, Elvis. I like to think that the stop sign, when it's bordered in white, is, you know, if no one else is around, you can roll through that thing, right? Country road stop sign.
That doesn't sound like star behavior at all. We're out of time. My guest is Michael Weatherly. His show, the new show on CBS is both. Thanks so much for doing this.
Yes, Elvis, it's been a deep pleasure again.
Not again, but you can come back and do it again. The show is Bull. It's on CBS. My recording engineer here at NPR in New York, our old friend Manoli Weatherill. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake White, who's the associate producer. I'm not very confused with Chevy Chase either. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps. Or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.